Open your Bibles to Judges chapter 8, and we are going to be in verse number 29. Judges chapter 8 and verse number 29. As you're finding your place there, we ran out of time our last time together when the writer of the book of Judges was introducing to us the son of Gideon, whose name was Abimelech, into the story. It is this writer's first pass to tell us about this son named Abimelech, who was the son of a concubine. You see, Gideon lived over in Ophrah, but in the passage that we read at the end of the last lesson, we learned that he had a concubine who lived over in the area of the town of Shechem. Now, Shechem's an important place. It is the place, if you remember, there's Mount Ebal, there's Mount Gerizim, and Shechem is the valley that's on the low place below the valleys, and that is where, back whenever the nation of Israel moved across the Jordan River, and where the blessings and the curses were pronounced, they were pronounced right there at Shechem and on the Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. The son, by this concubine's name that was the concubine of Gideon, was named Abimelech. Now, Abimelech means the father is king. And so we would normally miss this important point, as I said last week, as English-speaking people, because we rarely grasp the meanings that are behind these Hebrew words. Hebrew words are word pictures. They are not definite words. They are word pictures. They have a big meaning behind them. Gideon was living in Ophrah, and he was not the king there. He was not the king of Israel. He wanted the Lord to be the king, so he did that right. But in this passage, it seems very clear, the passage we read last week at the end of the lesson, it seems very clear that the rest of the nation of Israel thought of Gideon as their king. And so the writer told us way back, or back a few verses back in verse number 23, that Gideon had turned down the offer to be the king and the ruler. And he had also stopped all his children, descendants, from having the ability to be the king. But that had not stopped the thought of the people that Gideon was their king in their mind. Furthermore, as the son of Gideon's concubine living in Shechem, not in Ophrah with Gideon, the son's name told the people of Israel who he was. He was the son of the king, Gideon. But Gideon wasn't king. But it didn't matter. They knew who he was because of who he was. Remember, in the Hebrew words, in the Hebrew language, in that custom and culture of the day, they always named the person and said who their father was. Well, they didn't say that Abimelech was the son of Gideon. They said he was the son of the king. That is what the Hebrew name means, because he was not Gideon's firstborn, who was still a youth at the time that Gideon's victory over the Midianites. So because of that, we can assume rightly that Abimelech was born after the campaign, knew nothing of the Midianite campaign except for what had been told, because he didn't see it. He was born in that 40 years after the campaign, and Gideon was living in Ophrah. But how did Gideon come to have a concubine over in Shechem? Well, we don't know. But he did. And that concubine had a son, and that son's name was Abimelech, and his name told the whole nation that Gideon was his father. Now, we must pause here, because the name Abimelech in the context of the Bible is not going to be his given name. It's going to be a throne name. In this first pass through this part of the story, the writer is introducing Abimelech to us. In the next pass through, when he circles back around to tell us his story again in chapter 9, we will see Abimelech assert himself with that authority as the rightful ruler of Israel after the death of Gideon. Thus, bolstering the thought that Gideon was the assumed king by the people of the nation of Israel, because Abimelech says, "I can be king," when his dad died. It fills in the picture of what the Israelite people thought about Gideon. even in his retired life as he lived over there in Ophrah. Here we see also the awful sin of Gideon's polygamy. 70 sons were his by his many wives, and one son by a concubine. These were all his biological sons. Not one of them was a stepson, not one of them was adopted. They were all blood. Nevertheless, at the end of the 40 years, the fourth cycle ended with the death of Gideon. It was time for cycle 5 to begin. Gideon, till his death, had kept everyone safe, delivered them. But he's dead. So on to the fifth cycle we go. With the death of Gideon, cycle 5, the Philistine-Ammonite takeover begins with the insurrection of Israel. But it's going to take a while for the Philistine-Ammonite takeover to actually start, because the writer begins by recording the insurrection. Here in chapter 8, verse 33, we pick up there. Then it came about, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the sons of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals, and made Baal-Beroth their god. Thus the sons of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side, nor did they show kindness to the household of Jerubbaal, in accord with all the good that he had done in Israel. I want you to notice that the writer says, as soon as Gideon was dead, the insurrection started of the disobeying of the Lord by breaking the covenant and the commandments. Israel returned to making Baal their god. Surely, as Gideon was getting older and becoming frail, the people had these thoughts of turning their allegiance to Baal. And here the outcome comes. I want to tell you this. They may not have been actually openly practicing the worship of Baal, but they, when Gideon was still alive, but they were in their hearts. And after all, a new generation of children had come into adulthood while Gideon was getting older. The new generation had not seen firsthand the mighty works of the Lord. Therefore, they did not have firsthand experience with the Lord. Because of that, the Lord did just as He promised from the very, 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 very beginning. He allowed the surrounding nations to begin to encroach on Israel to oppress the people. Furthermore, the writer tells us that the people of Israel did. They did not show kindness to the household of Jerubbaal, in accord with all that he had done to Israel. Most adults have lived long enough, even today. And even as they would think back on their teenage years, if you would think back on your teenage years, to realize that people who have not lived through certain events in life and certain events in the nation are oblivious to the effects of those events on the hearts and the minds of people. Thus, because events are cyclical, each time these type of events occur, the same mistakes are made. But more than that, people who do not go through certain things tend to be insensitive to those who did go through it. In another thought, those whose ancestors were blessed beyond imagination are often ungrateful to those who gave the blessings. It is the same with our relationship with the Lord. The pulpit commentary, which I sometimes look at, states it this way concerning verse number 35. Forgetfulness of God is often the parent of ingratitude to men. The heart of stone, which is not touched by the love of Christ, is also insensible to the kindness of man. How true that is. And so, with time, the people of Israel forgot the goodness of the Lord that was expressed through the work of Gideon. And Gideon's descendants were not held in esteem and to the esteem that they should have been held. In an interesting turn now, as we turn to chapter number 9, the writer changes his style with Israel's insurrections in this fifth cycle. You see, in those previous four cycles of insurrection, the writer just told us that Israel sinned against the Lord by the worship of Baal. He just told us that. He didn't tell us how. He didn't tell us what was going on. He did that in all those previous times. But here in the fifth cycle, the writer begins to enter for us a record of the details concerning the information about the insurrection that is happening in Israel, that is leading these people to the point where the Lord is going to allow the oppression of the Philistines and the Amorites to come in. So here we see a full-blown description of at least one of the insurrections. He tells us of the works of the following three judges: Abimelech, who was just introduced to us, Tola, and Jair. As a preview, we will learn that Abimelech will have an evil rule over the people for 3 years. He's the concubine son of Gideon. Tola will judge in some form or fashion for 23 years, and Jair will judge in some form or fashion for 22 years. In all, that warning and the flowing of Israel's insurrection will last anywhere from 25 to 47 years before the Philistines and Ammonites take hold and oppress Israel. You say, why between 25 and 47 years? I'll explain that when we get there. Abimelech will take the first position by way of privilege. Tola and Jair will hold their position by way of politics. Abimelech by privilege. Tola and Jair by politics. None of these three were raised by the Lord to deliver Israel. Neither did Israel cry out for help during those years, between 25 and 47 years. Neither did they cry out for help. And so we begin with the story of Abimelech. Here in chapter 9, we pick up with him in verse number 1. And Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem to his mother's relatives and spoke to them and to the whole clan of the household of his mother's father, saying, speak now in the hearing of all the leaders of Shechem. Which is better for you, that 70 men, all sons of Jerubbaal, rule over you, or that one man rule over you? Also remember that I am your bone and your flesh. And his mother's relatives spoke all these words on his behalf in the hearing of all the leaders of Shechem. And they were inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he is our relative. Well, in chapter 8, the writer introduced Abimelech to us to identify his relatives in this passage. Abimelech was the only son of Gideon out of wedlock. All the rest of Gideon's sons were born to women who were properly married to Gideon. Abimelech's mother was a concubine. As we discovered in the previous chapter, all of Gideon's wives and families lived in Ophrah with him. However, Abimelech and his mother lived in Shechem. Because Abimelech lived in Shechem with his mother, he did not have the same access to Gideon, his father, and his 70 brothers over in Ophrah. And with the death of his father, Abimelech garnered the support of his mother's family here in Shechem. Why? Out of a sense of privilege. He was the son of a concubine. And because of that, he did not have the privilege afforded his brothers born to mothers in legal wedlock to Gideon. Nevertheless, Abimelech sought to bolster the privilege for himself by garnering the support of his mother's relatives. Would they instead be ruled by Gideon's sons who were not directly related by blood through his mother? Or would they rather be ruled by their direct blood relationships in Abimelech? One of the things we miss in the country we live in is the importance of family and blood relationships. Think of the old story we have heard about the Hatfields and the McCoys. There were two families that were bitter enemies of each other. However, the stories of both families, in both of those stories, we learn that within each family, there were also bitter enemies inside the families. Among the brothers and among the sisters of the Hatfields, and among the brothers and among the sisters of the McCoys. They would beat each other to a pulp and even kill their kin at times. But when an outsider of the family attacked a family member, all the hatred in the family was laid to the side momentarily, and the brothers and the sisters stood in unity against the outside enemy. Now, as soon as the outside enemy was handled, the siblings would resume fighting, took their fighting right back up right where they left off. So, too, was probably the case with Abimelech and his bloodline and his blood kin. They would rather have blood ruling over them than a person of non-blood. Abimelech was successful. His kin chose him. But Abimelech could not proceed as the entitled judge. He needed funds. He could not proceed as the entitled king. He needed money. How would he be compensated? And what would he do with the money? Chapter 9. Verse 4, they gave him 70 pieces of silver from the house of Baal-berith, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless fellows, and they followed him. Abimelech's compensation came from the offerings that were designated to the false god Baal-berith. Evidently, Abimelech's relatives in Shechem had built a house or a temple to Baal-berith, where offerings were stored. Here we see that offerings to the false gods were more than animals. They were more than produce. It was also in money through silver and gold. What did Abimelech do with that money taken from that treasury of Baal-berith? The writer tells us, he hired worthless and reckless fellows, and they followed him. We can only wonder if Abimelech hired 70 worthless men with one piece of silver per man to accompany him in the deed he had in mind. Why? We will see next. The brothers of Abimelech were killed. How many? Verse 5a. Then he went to his father's house at Ophrah and killed his brothers, the sons of Zerubbabel, 70 men on one stone. So much for being a half-blood brother. Abimelech wanted all his half-brothers dead. And that he did on one day, on one stone, with one exception. Please do not think that this is a one-time kind of event in Israel. We're going to see this type of thing where the whole house of a family is destroyed. We see it with Jeroboam in 1 Kings chapter 15, verse 29. We see it with the whole house of Basham in 1 Kings chapter 16, verses 11 through 12. We see it with the 70 sons of Ahab in 2 Kings chapter 10, verse 7. We see it with the royal seed of Judah in 2 Kings chapter 11, verse 1. All under evil pretenses. So, too, it was with Abimelech. His intentions were evil. We might want to point out at this junction in the Scripture an important fact. That nothing that is done with an evil intention ever turns out for good for the doer. Remember this. You cannot do something evil in an attempt to do something good. The Lord will never bless it. Never. The Lord did not call Abimelech to be the deliverer of Israel. He will surely not allow Abimelech to live very long because of all the evil that Abimelech is doing. One brother of Abimelech was kept alive. Not by Abimelech's choice, by the way, but by the brother's choice, the one who lived, verse 5b. But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. Why was Jotham able to escape? Well, most likely it was because, this is just my opinion, he was fortunate to have time to do so. He was the 70th in the line of the inheritance of Gideon. So in the minds of the people, the firstborn, Jether, was the most important. He died on that stone that day. They knew where he lived, and they headed to him first. And then they headed to the secondborn, and then the thirdborn, until the focus would be on the last, Jotham. But Jotham had heard what was going on, and had hid himself. But we might rightly surmise that the word was spreading fast as the brothers were being rounded. And Jotham had time to an opportunity to hide from the unscrupulous men, the 70 men who was out there, the men who were out there, to kill the 70 sons. More than 40 years before, the people wanted Gideon to be their king. But as we saw, Gideon declined for himself and all his heirs. Now, with all the sons of Gideon dead except for two, one is a concubine's son, and one is a blood son by a wedded wife, Jotham. Abimelech is still crowned as the first official, but unofficial, king of Israel in verse number 6. All the men of Shechem and all Beth Milo assembled together, and they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar which was in Shechem. Where was Abimelech crowned king? The writer tells us it was by the oak of the pillar which was in Shechem. Have we heard about this oak and pillar before? Yes, we have, and here it is. It's in Joshua chapter 24, verse 25 through 28. So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day, and he made for them a statue and an ordinance in Shechem. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God. And he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, behold, this stone shall be for a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord which he spoke to us. Thus it shall be for us a witness against you, so that you do not deny your God. Then Joshua dismissed the people, each to his own inheritance. How dare Abimelech and the men do such a thing at such an important time and at such an important place? In Joshua setting the stone, there is a pillar under the oak with those words written on there, the law written on that stone, there where the blessings and the curses were spoken on Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. The godless men crowned him king, funded with money offered to Baal. Wrong never brings a right result. Evil is never rewarded. The very act that at that place would ultimately be witnessed against Abimelech, as prophesied by Joshua. The Lord would never bless such evil disobedience against him. Abimelech was already there at Mount Gerizim, but when Jotham heard the word of Abimelech's doings there and being crowned king, Jotham moves up to Mount Gerizim, and on Mount Gerizim he stands 800 feet above the floor of the valley where Shechem rests. And there we see Abimelech being challenged by Jotham. First, Jotham challenges by reasoning. Jotham speaks to the men who wanted Abimelech as king in verse number 7. Now, when they told Jotham, he went and stood on the top of Mount Gerizim and lifted his voice and called out. Thus he said to them, "Listen to me, O men of Shechem, that God may listen to you." Hear the plea of Jotham. Sin was in control of Abimelech, and by connection, sin was with the men of Shechem, the relative of Abimelech who had just crowned him king. And Jotham cried out to the men of Shechem in an attempt to persuade them to listen to him so God would listen to them. But they did not listen. And so with reasoning, Jotham told a story. We hear next the story of the tree that wanted to be a king. The tree that wanted to be a king. But once again, sadly, as has happened in the last few times together, our time has run out. So we must pick up with the story, Jotham's story of the tree who wanted to be king, when we return to study God's Word again.